When you have a character who's playing like a slime boy and the other character's playing like a really fat lizard and one's playing like Humpty Dumpty, it completely shatters the straight-faced authoritarian illusion of race and just replaces it with like complete fucking nonsense. I love the idea of proliferating the number and type of races, quote unquote, to the point where like the entire logical structure of it collapses in on itself and race as a category ceases to become coherent or meaningful in any sense.
Hello, salut, bonjour. Welcome to The Lost Bay, a show about indie RPG creators and artists and what's behind their creative processes. I'm Iko. Quick reminder that the podcast episodes are also available on YouTube with English subtitles. Today my guest is Ava Islam, designer of the game Errant. Errant is a mad fan game. It has been successfully Kickstarted during ZineQuest 3. Ava is currently working to finalize the book, which can be pre-ordered at killjester.com, the company Ava has founded with Chris Manel, her business partner. On Errant's Kickstarter page, you can still read a short blurb that explains what Errant means, what errants are. It sets somehow the mood of the game. It goes like this: you have no home, you have no job, you have no friends, you have no family, you have no prospects. What you do have are a particular set of skills, the kind that make respectable folks avoid you, a handful of pennies, and a suitably bleak disregard for your own life. The way you describe the errands in the Kickstarter, yeah, that hooked me. That's so strong. I was just wondering.
When I was first writing Errant, do you know Ben Milton's rule set Knave?
Yeah, sure.
When he released that too, like he released like the Word file that it comes in with all like all the layout and stuff done so that you can like hack the game. And Errant isn't like mechanically similar to Knave at all. But like when I was writing my rules for the first time, I was like typing them up in that document. And I was thinking about like a name sort of related to Knave to sort of signal some sort of like, I don't know, generational or genre affinity with Knave, you know, sort of one word medievalish title, kind of disparaging about the player. And that like opening little monologue, I wrote it when I was like dirt fucking poor, living like paycheck to paycheck, barely, like not even, like I was getting assistance and stuff. Just feeling like really like the dregs of society, like marginalized in so many different ways, and thinking about the fact that what kind of person would realistically like go into like deep, scary caves in the dark where monsters live to try to steal treasure from there is people who can't fucking fit into normal society anywhere. In a sense, that opening monologue in Errant is ironic. It is the fantasy that errants believe about themselves, that, you know, that they stand outside the system and that they have to rebel against it. But is that that's like the very first page of the book, and the very last few pages are rules about how to invade lands and conquer people there and build your castles and armies, right? If you think about what the book says about the errant's journey, you go from nobody to the exact same sort of entrenched political violence that ostracized you in the first place. And that's because the kind of violence that produces errants is endemic to the system. And so errants don't actually stand outside it. They aren't this like sort of romantic wandering vagabond that they think they are. They are part of like the natural flow and circuit of capital and violence within the system itself. They're part of the process that sustains it.
I've read the preview of Errant online. It's free and accessible for all. I'll add the link to the website where you can find it in the show notes. Reading those rules, what really struck me is that I felt like Errant was somehow taking apart the Dungeons & Dragons engine and rebuilding it totally, like from scratch. We'll hear Ava about that in just a moment. She'll talk about pizza first. That might be a little disorienting, but bear with us. To be honest, when I have read the Errant rules on the website, what I thought is this game is going to replace D&D, basically. Some core principles are totally rewritten, and I feel like it's like rebooting totally the game, you know? And that's huge. That's huge task that you give to yourself. I mean, this is what I'm projecting into the draft of your game. So does that make sense to you? Or
I think about it a lot in the sense of like... Think about, so like, I mean, you've got your Neapolitan style pizza and, you know, you fucking make it with the San Marzano tomatoes and the double O flour and you with this whatever kind of wood fired oven you have in there. The pizza reflects the time and the place that it was made. And then you have immigrants that come to New York or Chicago and they don't have those things on hand. But they are like, how can we recreate this dish, the experience, the flavor, the memory of it with what we have? And you create something that is like still recognizably a pizza, but like the form, the method, the ingredients, like all of those things are different because of the circumstances. And I mean, I think that's how I think of Errant. Like when I play Errant, I don't call it Errant. I call it D&D. Like I started trying to learn how to run D&D and I was like, this doesn't work. Let me try this rule set. Let me try adding these things from these rule sets or this blog and changing everything and tweaking everything as I'm playing it to make it suit what I need to do better, to make it like easier for me to run. Every single component of the dish that is D&D is there. I've subbed out every ingredient for a different ingredient to the same effect. That's kind of how I think about it.
Yeah, you know a lot about pizza.
I like food.
You like food. Yeah, you must try Roman pizza. It's great.
I've had Neapolitan style pizza. I've never been to Italy, though.
Okay. How did you start playing RPGs? What's the story for you?
When I was a kid, me and my parents moved from Bangladesh to Australia when we were about 5. And we lived in this sort of like little flat. It was kind of like adjoined to the larger main house where the landlord lived. The landlord was this like elderly Italian woman in her 60s. And I was a little kid. My parents were immigrants. They were working all the time. So she became my nonna, you know? Like I would just be at her house every day. She'd be feeding me and stuff. She had a son who lived with her. When I met him, he must have been in his like late 20s. And he was just the perfect role model for me as like a nerdy kid. He was like a programmer and he had all of these like fantasy books and stuff. He's like the one who taught me how to read English. You know, forever reading was like my favorite thing. And so I was always reading like fantasy books and shit and dragons. I fucking like love dragons as a kid. I was so obsessed with dragons. They were like my favorite thing. He had all of the AD&D first edition books. He loved them. Like he had like those little brass tips that you put on the corner of hardcover books to stop them from wearing out. He gave me the Mentzer books. That's the one with the very famous illustration of like the fighter with the sword and the dragon like looming in front of it, the one that they show at all the cons and stuff. And so like I read that book cover to cover so many times. I still have it. He and his friends would get together to play D&D sometimes. So I would like tag along. So it'd be these like 3-4 dudes in their 30s and like a little 10-year-old there just sitting playing D&D. Eventually like left that flat and I didn't get to see him as much in high school and stuff. So I like went to the store with my dad and like I bought what I saw was like the D&D starter kit. I like didn't even know that there were like different editions and stuff at the time. So it was like the 4th edition starter kit. And I just remember like looking through it and being like, this isn't the same game. Like this isn't Dungeons and Dragons. What's going on?
So Hava got back playing RPGs with Dungeons & Dragons 5e, trying to tweak the rules to emulate the experience of the first games she played as a kid. Then, The Black Hack by David Black came out. The Black Hack is a game that uses the original 1970s D&D rules in a streamlined modern fashion.
The Black Hack came out. And everyone kind of like collectively like lost their shit for the Black Hack. Like everyone was making a blank hack at that time. It was crazy. So like I like fell in love with that system because it seemed like so simple, so easy and straightforward. You know, so I started running that for the group that I was playing with then. And the Black Hack is really where it starts when I'm talking about like switching out all of these elements because I kept like tinkering with it. I was like, oh, I'll like add some of the classes I've seen from like the blog posts or like, you know, the spells from Wonder and Wickedness and stuff. And then eventually I just kind of kept changing things or being like, this doesn't work for that. I don't know how to do this. Like, this isn't supporting the type of game I want to run. And I kept fiddling with it until I ended up with Errant, basically.
I was wondering, yeah, what's the fine-tuning process of all this? What is it? Is it running games?
Pretty much, I would say that's like how most of the things have adapted, is from me running games. So yeah, there's like a lot of levels to it. The sort of like life cycle of it is that I would like run a campaign and it would run for like 3 or 6 months. And as I'm running it, I'm like always going into the rules and making tweaks and changes. Okay, I can make this better. And then, you know, the campaign ends. I don't touch the game for a while. I start up a new campaign. I like look at the thing with fresh eyes and I'm like, oh, why was I doing it this way? It's so much better this way. And then rewrite a bunch of it. Like I've changed the core mechanic so many times. And then after a while, like it got to a point where everything was kind of like more or less stable. And then it was just a matter of like little fine tweaks, like things like how many slots does a donkey have?
So do you play like weekly or?
Usually when I run a campaign, it's weekly. Yeah.
And have you been like playing / developing Errant with like a consistent group of players or?
It's been a lot of people. There have been like some people that have like stayed from group to group over the years. But overall, like the group that I was playing with last was not the people that I was playing with in the campaign before that. I've played with lots of different people over the years. I probably end up playing Errant with like over 100 people at this point.
And listen, so you've been running so many games, you know, so do you find time to write your own adventures or do you pick stuff around?
Yeah. No, I don't. And that's the other thing too, is that there's like a million great fucking adventures that's come out of the OSR. The plan from here on out is to start writing more of my own adventures. And I'm working on a bunch of projects for other people that I've been contracted to do to write adventures right now. But no, for like almost the entire time I've been GMing, I've been using like published material because I don't know. And it's easy. And because I've been working on the system, but yeah, like after Errant comes out, I am planning to focus more on adventures going forward.
Publishing your work is always a big step, especially when you do it for the first time, especially when it's a new system. I've asked Ava when and how she decided to make Errant public and do a Kickstarter. Here's Ava about it.
So I think I've kind of wanted to do that from the start almost because, you know, when I found the OSR community, the thing that I like wanted most, like I want to hang out with these people, like I want to be part of this community, like I want to contribute or whatever. But there was this kind of like prevalent attitude of like, we don't need systems. We don't need any more systems. Like we don't care about systems. We want adventures and stuff, which is funny because still everyone and their mother was like making systems or like writing up little rules to put on their blog. Developing Errant was like me learning how to run old school games. So for that reason, I felt like I can't like actually contribute to the community until I'm done doing this, because this is like me figuring out how to run these games that everyone is talking about and run them in the right way, because everyone else seems to be running games the right way. All their games seem so creative and fun and meaningful. And so I always figured that my plan was to just like, I'll write this, I'll release it in case anybody like wants it, and then I'll get down to like the real business of like making adventures or whatever. So yeah, I guess like in that sense, I'd like always wanted to publish Errant and put it out there.
In Medfan RPGs, Dungeons and Dragons alike, there's goblins, elves, dwarves, and other folks, what are called in a lot of those games, quote-unquote, races. In Errant, there aren't any races, there are ancestries. There's four of them, and they're designed in a very non-classical way. Errant ancestries are somehow very open or broad and give a lot of freedom to the player. Basically, you can play anything you want and just tie your character to one of those four ancestries. Each ancestry has specific mechanics tied to them, like for example, the cunning ancestry, that could be anything from halflings to goblins or to squirrel folk, has the following mechanics. Once per session, you may re-roll any d20 roll. Those ancestries are very open somehow. Because classically, like in Medfan games, ancestries come with a series of stereotypes and they're closed things somehow, you know?
Like the fucking term race, like all of it. It's like, you know, like it's a thing. It's its own thing. When you talk about D&D as like a colonialist fantasy, when you talk about it as like this fantasy of supremacy or whatever, you can't not talk about race. Like race is central to it. Because like race isn't real, right? Like race has zero basis in fucking science or anything quote unquote real that you can point to. It's entirely a cultural superstructure. Race is the byproduct of racialization. Racialization is the cultural process that people do to other people for whatever reasons that they need for race to exist. And D&D is like the fantasy of racialization writ large, the fantasy of if racialization actually had like a physical basis in reality, you know? I'm not a white dude. I'm pretty far from being a white dude. So, you know, as much as like I love D&D and like I don't even really try to change it. Like, I'm not about making D&D woke or decolonial or whatever. I don't think you can do that and I have no interest in it. Like if fucking white people loved colonizing shit, I should get to enjoy it too, you know? Like even the term race, when you think about it and when you think about what D&D is presenting, is just like, it's like this weird conflation of these concepts of species and culture and all of that all being mashed together. So for a while, I was thinking of what is a better term to replace it. I was doing species for a bit, but I didn't like even the biological underpinnings of that. And I think I settled on ancestry and I settled on making it so open because all I really wanted from it was these game effects. Like I didn't want ancestry to be like plus to this stat or plus to whatever like that. I wanted like little things, tiny little abilities that players could pick. It's a closed set of four in that sense. You pick one of four abilities, stuff that makes sense. But I found what the result of that has been in my games is this whole idea of the racial fantasy has just completely fallen apart. Like we have this setting and it has a tone or whatever. There's no sense to it when you have a character who's playing like a slime boy and the other character's playing like a really fat lizard and one's playing like Humpty Dumpty or whatever. It completely shatters the straight-faced, serious, authoritarian illusion of race and just replaces it with like complete fucking nonsense. I love the idea of proliferating the number and type of races, quote unquote, into just absurdity to the point where like the entire logical structure of it collapses in on itself and race as a category ceases to become coherent or meaningful in any sense. You know, that's what I've enjoyed about it in my games.
Like the ancestries, Eva has reformatted the traditional classes. They're called archetype in the game. You'll still find the four typical tropes of Medfan games, warrior, rogue, cleric, and magic practitioner, but the whole class system has been rebuilt from scratch. Each ancestry has a particular set of rules that make playing it like a micro game into the game, and that's super exciting.
I really tried to design each archetype so that they fundamentally like played different than the other ones. That the actual things you did at the table, the mechanics you used to interface with that class were different from the other ones. I feel like when you play something like 5e, the classes can all start to feel samey because you're kind of fundamentally doing the same thing for each and every single one. You're like managing a number of resources and you're rolling a d20 and adding a modifier. You know, like the mechanical structure for it all kind of feels the same. The place where it differentiates itself most is in like resource management. Each class has like different types of resources to manage. I have that in Errant too. Like each class has its own particular resource that it needs to manage, but I wanted to tie that resource management into a specific different subsystem than every other class has.
The deviant archetype is fascinating. The deviant in Errant is the rogue or the thief, and it has amazing mechanics attached to its class. Deviant can use jetons, think of jetons as poker chips or maybe tokens, to alter the difficulty of their checks, but they can also make a wager and bet jetons on that wager. Basically, deviants can bet on themselves. The wager mechanics for the deviant, that's so great. And also, that's so perfect for that kind of character. I mean, that's what a thief or a deviant would do, the gamble. How did you come up with that?
Yeah. So, you know, your sort of trickster characters, your Bugs Bunnies or your Deadpools or Loki or whatever, they interact with the narrative material itself. They make it pliable. They can affect that. If magic users, like they can change reality within reality, right? Like they're inside the world and they break the rules of the world. But rogues, thieves, whatever, they break the rules of the game. And that's what I had for a while. The deviant is the place where I can put all of those kind of like story game mechanics, like the ones that allow the players to change the narrative. The old version of the deviant has like a lot of things where they have like their expertises or whatever that like kind of change the way certain rules work. Everyone play them because you can kind of customize them and they're really strong. Like but they weren't active, I think was the problem I was having with them. Like all of their abilities were passive. They used to just lower the DV of all checks by their renown that they were like you know, experts in, and they had all of these abilities to change the rules of the game, and it was just passive, and it was just too many things to keep track of, and it just wasn't like engaging gameplay. Like, one of the design principles I have for Arrant is like, make the players do things, make them decide to do things. Again, it's going back to meaningful decisions. They have limited resources, and they have to make decisions about when they want to use them. The Deviant didn't have that. So I was looking at like a bunch of games, I guess, for inspiration. Like, I looked at Rogue 2E by Kazumi Chen. I looked at, I think it's called The Treasure at the End of This Dungeon is an Escape from the Dungeon and We Will Never Escape from the Dungeon. I'm not sure if that's the correct title. And I was just kind of like looking at the way in which like they used the kind of abilities they gave their rogues, just sort of like thinking about those. Well, they all have mechanics that just kind of say, the rogue can do this. That's good. And then I just need to tie it to a resource somehow. I came up with the resource. They have the non-risky function that they can use the jetons for, which is to just lower the difficulty of checks, or they can like make these wagers. I thought the gambling mechanic just kind of made sense. It fits with the theme. And yeah, now I'm really happy with where the class is at. It feels like it has its own interesting subsystem. It ties into a resource that they have to manage. Yeah, I don't know. I like it. I think I did a good job.
Yeah, you did. And also it's great that the resource is those jetons, you know? It's money. That's what a deviant would handle, you know? And
yeah,
that's so great. That's great.
I really hope that if I run a game of this in person again, it's going to be fun to give one player a stack of poker chips and have them just drop them on the table. It's like the platonic form of money. If they're like a trickster character, then this is like cosmic currency that they're betting with.
Reading Arrant, I felt that somehow there was something extremely political about it. I mean, it's a brilliant creation to play RPG games and have fun. But somehow, in its structure and rules and mechanics, I felt that I could read something about politics or economics. And here's Ava about it.
Like, I didn't set out to write Arrant with, like, I have a political message that I want to convey or whatever. But what is happening is that, again, like all of this stuff has emerged from like the necessities of play, right? I always had characters who were like, I want to start a revolution or I want to start a cult. You know, D&D is a game about money. It's a game about economy. At least old school D&D is. And once you have that, you can't escape power, right? It's intrinsic. And I mean, it's intrinsic in the game, even in OD&D, you know, they're based on war games and it's about like taking your dude and building him up so that he gets a castle and a bunch of knights, and then you can go play your war games with that army, you know? There's so much politics there. It's about political economies of violence. It's about force, you know? And so then when we're playing D&D, these questions come up because D&D has quest givers. It has people in positions of power. It has cities. Cities have rulers, you know? You do things for people of power, and players want ways to interact with that. They want ways to gain political power or start their own factions or to become close to people in power or to make enemies. You know, these are all things that are in the game that didn't have like enough robust mechanical support for me. So I put them in there. I'm like, what happens if the players break a law? They go on trial. And all of these are questions that are related to like economics and force. To me, it's just like I'm systematizing things that I feel like are already in the game. And the way that that's taking shape is influenced by like my perspective as a leftist, by someone who has like a particular view of like violence and the kind of violences that are in D&D and economies, the kind of economies that are in D&D. So in many ways, like my rules sort of make that explicit. Right? Like there's a big deal about how much debt these errants go into. There's a big deal about how economically marginalized they start off as. And there's a big deal about how they can't save any money and stuff like that. Those concerns are on my mind. But again, I don't think that there's anything in there. I don't think I've like added anything into the game that it wasn't in the game to begin with. Yeah.
And so, yeah, what's next for Arrant? Did you want to tell us when you're going to release the book or...
I'm hoping for February of next year. So quarter one, 2022. There's all the Kickstarter bonuses from that, like the little dungeon and the little world builder zine. And I'm working with Gus right now. Gus just released an adventure, at least at the time of recording, called Tomb Robbers on the Crystal Frontier. I edited that. I did a conversion of it for Arrant from OSE. Gus is writing another adventure like for Arrant. Called Curse of the Ganshogger, which is about a goose dragon trying to kill the Goose King. And after the book, my next goal is to just like sort of complete the base set. I want to write a sort of like, you know, my version of the Dungeon Master's Guide, you know, my monster manual and my Keep on the Borderlands, my B2, my like my intro module of this is what an errant module looks like. And from there, I just want to keep supporting the system. Like, I want to write adventures. I want to help other people write adventures or supplements or whatever it is people want to do. I want to grow the community, and I want to help other people make the stuff they want to make.
That's great. So I had the good feeling we're getting rid of D&D finally.
Yeah, I mean, well, hopefully. I think I've called Errant in the past, like, artisanal organic grass-fed D&D, so it's just like we're just upgrading is really all that we're doing.
That was the brilliant mind of Ava Islam. You can pre-order online Ava's game. It's published by the company she has founded with Chris Manel, Kill Jester. I'll put the link to their website in the show notes. Ava has an awesome blog where she writes about game design and RPGs. I'll put the link to that in the show notes too. Be sure to check it. The Lost Bay is a podcast about indie RPG creators and artists and what's behind their creative processes. It's produced by me, Iko, and music is by Every Eyes. If you want to get in touch or get news about the podcast, you can find me on Twitter at The Lost Bay. Thank you so much for listening, and salut, à bientôt.